you need to talk technology. No one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
And a very good Tuesday morning to you. Adam Lepp, the Computer Guy, with the first October 2018 show all about technology on The Talking Place. What will we talk about today? Well, coming up first, you know I am very much in favor of net neutrality, and I'm very aggravated that the U.S. government is essentially trying to throw that down the toilet. Well, California has just signed a law of its own about net neutrality, which takes place on January 1st of 2019. The governor recently signed the bill. Not surprisingly, President Donald Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions are essentially, well, they're suing California over this law. And you can imagine, you probably can hear my blood boil as I talk. We're going to talk about that in detail in a minute or two. Invite your opinion. Do you agree with me? Disagree? That's okay. We want to hear what you have to say. Also, we'll talk about connected homes, Alexa, connected cards, voice-operated remotes, voice-activated control of your smartphone or other device, statistics, who's using voice activation, all that good stuff. Seems like Black Friday and Christmas are rapidly approaching, so maybe looking for some gifts. An Alexa, again, a smart home device, the Google Home products, maybe on your shopping list. Coming up after this show, we have Talking Points with Satch Sullinger. There's a man who can talk about a lot of different points, and I do encourage you to listen. Wrestling legend Thunderbolt Patterson will be joining us throughout the day. Scott Spears with the Now program coming up after the noon hour, speaking with one of the editors of the Columbus Dispatch about their endorsement for governor. Bit of a surprise, but that's part of the fun of politics and current events. Hope you enjoyed my show yesterday with Dr. Ron Feynman discussing the legacy of Jimmy Carter, celebrating birthday number 94 yesterday. And, of course, we also discussed Dr. Ford and Jeff Kavanaugh. Will he or will he not become attorney Supreme Court Justice? Well, we shall see. Also called Scott's show just after 1 p.m. and talked about that and other topics. Please listen to those shows via our archives if you've not already done so at our website, WWGH1071.com. My pleasure to start the live broadcast day today on October 2nd. Adam the Computer Guy on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. If you listen to this show and my other show, Mid-Morning Coffee Break, where we often have Dr. Ron Feynman on to talk about current events and often controversial stuff, you're aware that I am very much in favor of net neutrality. I don't trust ISPs. That's from my own experience of friends and family and clients of mine. We need to have net neutrality to make sure that your provider doesn't bias bandwidth and availability based upon their own beliefs, whether it's a political, philosophical belief or just being able to make more money. That is, they can't say, we don't like Twitter, so if you use Twitter, if you read and follow Donald Trump's Twitter account, we're going to add $10 to your bill or we'll make it slower. Can't do that. Doesn't matter to me what you like, what you use. It's just like your electricity. What you use it for is your business, as long as it's legal. So throttling bandwidth, changing bandwidth, charging extra, tricks like that are completely unacceptable. And I'm all for not regulating too much. I'm not in favor of big government, but in terms of ISPs, we need to have this before it gets out of hand. And ISPs, with the defeat of net neutrality in the last few months, saying that they're not going to throttle, they're not going to change bandwidth or take advantage of this right they have, but I don't believe them. We need to have strong regulation. Now, some places, like our most populous state, California, they've enacted their own net neutrality legislation, and I salute Governor Jerry Brown for doing that. He recently signed the USA's toughest net neutrality measure. Now, the problem is that President Donald Trump, who for some reason doesn't understand this, again, he's a big user of social media. Why he would not understand the importance of not throttling Twitter or any other social media at the ISP's discretion, at their whim? Why we need to stop that ability? Well, Donald Trump isn't happy about California's law, and he is essentially filing a lawsuit on behalf of the administration to counteract California's statewide net neutrality law. The U.S. Department of Justice wants to stop the law. They're arguing that it creates burdensome anti-consumer requirements that go against the federal government's approach of deregulating the internet. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said in a statement, "Once again, the California legislature has enacted an extreme and illegal state law attempting to frustrate federal policy." I'd say good for them. Again, this is one thing where I do get political, folks, and I talk about what I think. I cannot stress the importance of having net neutrality. And for saying that, Jeff Sessions is a moron. There, I said it. This law is the latest example of the nation's most populous state seeking to drive public policy outside its borders and rebuff President Trump's agenda. And according to the Washington People, who, in my opinion, are a bunch of, pick a different word, imbeciles. How about that? Because again, I feel very strongly about this, not just as an IT provider, but as a manager of this radio station and user of social media and user of computers since the 70s. And I read this, talk about it, my blood starts to boil. Now, Governor Jerry Brown in California did not explain his reasons for signing a bill or to comment on the federal lawsuit. Supporters of the new law, again, it's a net neutrality law recently signed by California's Governor Jerry Brown. Supporters cheered it as a win for the internet freedom. It will take effect January 1st of 2019. Its author, Democratic Senator Scott Wiener, said, "It's a historic day for California. A free and open internet is a cornerstone of 21st century life. Our democracy, our economy, our health care and public safety systems and day-to-day activities." So I would say to Senator Wiener, your name should be Winner, because you're a winner as far as I'm concerned. And we'll leave it at that. Now, as you know, and I've talked about many times and talked to Scott Spears on the air about it, the FCC last year repealed rules that prevented internet companies from exercising more control over what people watch and see on the internet. Telecom companies lobbied hard, and these guys have a lot of money, and they merge. We've seen AT&T become a conglomerate of many companies in the Time Warner merger. There are essentially three companies at this time, and who knows what other mergers will take place, and these guys have a lot of lobbying power and a lot of money. Anyway, telecom companies lobbied hard, as you know, to kill net neutrality or water it down, saying that it would lead to higher internet and cell phone bills and discourage investments in faster internet. They say it's unrealistic to expect them to comply with internet regulations that differ from state to state. U.S. Telecom is a telecommunications trade group, and they said California writing its own rules will create problems. Well, I agree that there will be issues if a state's law isn't the same as national law. We've seen that with marijuana laws, and we saw it previously with same-sex marriage. I mean, there are some parallels. It's not a great analogy. Bottom line is, if we had this law countrywide, we wouldn't have to worry about it. We need to do that with marijuana, as far as I'm concerned, and we did it with same-sex marriage. It's made it easier. Okay, not a perfect analogy, but you see what I'm getting at. Let's have consistency. And this is one thing that has really aggravated me about the Trump administration. And as I've said, there are things that Donald Trump believes that I agree with. But this totally loses all of its credibility as far as I'm concerned. And Jeff Sessions, you know, he ain't the sharpest tool in the shed to begin with, and just what he said about this irks me just a tad. Anyway, do I talk a little too strongly about this? Well, I feel strongly about it. You can hear my blood boil, my blood pressure go up, but I think it's important, and not just as an IT provider with my own company, as a manager here at the station, where it's important that our bandwidth is not biased for or against. I'm not in favor of having an ISP say we like WWGH and let's give them more bandwidth than Twitter. I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of playing fair. And as an American, I think we need to have this stuff. Anyway, before I ramble more than I already have done, U.S. Telecom, again, a telecommunications trade group, said rather than 50 states stepping in with their own conflicting open internet solutions, we need Congress to step up with a national framework for the whole internet ecosystem and resolve the issue once and for all. Advocates of net neutrality, people like yours truly, worry that without rules, internet providers would create fast lanes and slow lanes that favor their own sites and apps or make it harder for the consumer to see content from competitors. Again, I'm not in favor of Frontier, an internet provider that we use here, and that's very big in this area, saying, we love WWGH. We'll go ahead and give their website, their stream, more juice, more bandwidth than a competing radio station. I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of playing fair. And obviously, even playing not playing fair when it's in your favor, that isn't cool either. So believe me, there isn't any kind of a personal interest in this. You pay for your bandwidth. What you do with it, again, as long as it's legal, is your business, just like electricity. You don't pay more per kilowatt hour for using a Hoover vacuum cleaner than you do for using a Dirt Devil. You use the vacuum cleaner that you want. The power company gets their kilowatt hour charge, and all is well. And I see that as being similar, as the internet is a utility, not unlike your electricity or water or your natural gas. Now, the idea that net neutrality not being in existence and hurting the consumer and hurting providers, limits on consumer choice, or upstart companies being shut out because they can't buy this access to getting more bandwidth. We call that the fast lane. And there should only be one lane. Also, with net neutrality, it bans zero rating. And this is a new law in California that the state enacted on a statewide level, which takes place, it starts enforcement on January 1st of 2019. So the law bans what's called zero rating. And what is that? Well, it's where internet providers don't count certain content against a monthly data cap, generally video streams produced by an ISP's own subsidiaries and partners, and that's where they're definitely not playing fair. Oregon, Washington, and Vermont have approved legislation related to net neutrality, but California's measure is seen as the most comprehensive attempt to codify the principle in a way that might survive a likely court challenge. An identical bill was also introduced in New York. So we'll keep an eye on this, but I applaud California for taking the initiative and not being afraid to challenge the Trump administration on this important, necessary legislation for net neutrality. So, you know, I have my opinion, and I think it's valid. And as, again, I have a personal interest in this as a internet consultant, IT guy, manager here at the station, show host, producer, and just as an American, it's the right thing to do. What do you think? If you agree with me, disagree, that's fine. I take all opinions. Send me an email. Put a comment on our Facebook page. You can reach me at adam@wwgh1071.com. You're listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, a weekly feature, twice a week, Tuesday and Thursday, between about 9:13 a.m. and 10 in the morning, right here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Thank you so much for listening. So what does Amazon have in store for later this year as the holiday season rapidly approaches? Well, they will unveil 8 new Alexa power devices for the car and home. According to CNBC, a report that they unveiled back in September. Now, these Alexa-powered devices include a microwave oven, an amplifier, a receiver, a subwoofer, and an in-car gadget. We'll talk a little more about the voice-activated and smart speaker matrix of products in a few minutes. Now, anyway, Amazon is expected to reveal some of the devices throughout the fall. All the devices connect easily to Alexa, and some will have the voice assistant built in. Now, the products mark Amazon's first move into the home appliances market, an area where competitors have already staked out their turf. Now, smart folks at Amazon can do a lot, but like a lot of tech companies, they team with other smart folks, and they're working with home builders. One of the home builders, Lennar, earlier in 2018, launched the first Wi-Fi certified smart home design with integrated automation and Amazon Alexa voice control. Amazon opened showrooms in Lennar model homes called Amazon Experience Centers to demonstrate and help sell their smart home devices and consumer electronic services, including their popular Fire TV with the streaming Prime content. Now, reportedly, Amazon has been seeking similar deals with other home builders. So what about the car? You know, we have technology in the car. My car has the GM OnStar Wi-Fi plan, which is a really good deal on newer Chevrolets and other GM vehicles, and has a hotspot built in. And I have my Sirius XM radio. I listen to that when I don't listen to this wonderful radio station. So I wouldn't say I have smart technology, but I have up-to-date technology. Well, to go a step further, Amazon plans to put Alexa into the automobile market. Audi. They showed off their first e-tron sport utility vehicle. So what's so special about that? Well, that was back at an event in San Francisco in September. And that's Audi's first vehicle with Alexa integrated into the console display. So my car is pretty fancy with its Wi-Fi hotspot. Well, this goes a couple steps further. Hyundai has partnered with Amazon on Alexa since 2016. Ford demonstrated an Alexa-powered in-car system at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last year. And Toyota and BMW also have teamed up with Amazon on Alexa. So it's definitely coming to fruition, as they say. Rob Enderle, an expert on this stuff, said, if the next big interface is voice, and that looks to be the case, Amazon's trying to get to critical mass so Alexa becomes the de facto standard. So in this competitive smart speaker, smart home, smart car market, what are Amazon's strengths and weaknesses? Well, according to, again, the expert Rob Enderle, Alexa's strengths are market penetration, ease of use, and relatively low entry and product prices. However, he said, it's not as good as Google's offering, even less so on licensed devices. It isn't true AI or artificial intelligence as of yet, which sets an expectation it can't yet meet. And the products tend to have false starts, responding to television programs, radio broadcasts, or comments not intended for them. So the old false positive, always an issue in anything tech-related. Alexa, as you may know, and we've talked about this, has been plagued by false positives. Examples when it's triggered by sounds other than the wake word. Earlier in 2018, Alexa made news when devices using it randomly uttered laughter, spooking some users. Or maybe Alexa was listening to my show and giggled a little bit. You never quite know, because there's always a wisecrack when I take the airwaves. Doug Henschen, He's a principal analyst at Constellation Research. He said, still, smart, interactive speakers have been a huge success, and Amazon is far and away the leader in terms of the number of such devices sold. He said it's a smart move for Amazon to capitalize on this popularity by seeking to extend the ecosystem beyond the home. Alexa now boasts tens of thousands of skills, but most users of Amazon Echo devices don't get much beyond simple requests, like asking for kitchen timers and news and weather updates. Offering devices with Alexa promises an easy route to smart connected experiences triggered by simple voice commands, as well as streamlining, if not elimination, of complicated setups. Anything Amazon can do to create pre-integrated experiences for the customer makes it more likely that Alexa will be used in a wider context. Meanwhile, home builder and car maker partners get the cachet of having smart experiences within their products. It's a win-win, low-risk proposition for both parties, so long as they can deliver on the promise of an easy experience that's helpful to the consumer. Now, what about Google? And they certainly have their Google Home devices. When I go to Costco, they're all over the electronics department. Well, Google's been pushing into the connected home and car markets, and of course, other big players, Apple and Microsoft. Google and Apple offer smartphones, as you know, which give them a ready-made door into smart homes and cars. And the expert, Doug Henschen, said, Google and Apple have the edge of having mobile devices in the hands of hundreds of millions of consumers. Amazon has to act quickly to extend the Alexa ecosystem's reach within homes and into mobile environments before they solidify their mobile beachheads and push back into home-based interactions. Now, with that in mind, Amazon is funding at a higher level and has vastly deeper penetration into the segments. The irony is that Apple effectively launched the product, but Amazon's running away with it at the moment. And, you know, that happens a lot in technology. That was pretty much how Microsoft Windows got started. Apple had the graphical user interface with the mouse, and then Microsoft developed an interface similar, although certainly at that time not as good as the Apple or Mac interface. But they've essentially taken the ball and run with it, and now if you want a graphical user interface, you have the Macintosh computers and you have Windows computers, and of course now it's extended to tablets, mobile devices, and other ways of communicating and using your favorite geek tools. And it's kind of how technology works. There's an idea other people build on it. I know as a programmer, a lot of what I do is taking what someone else has designed and totally changing it and customizing it for yourself or for your client. And we all build upon these ideas, and that's kind of what's cool about programming, is that we all kind of share our brain cells and make the world a better place. We need a little more of that in politics and other fields. So we talked about the smart home, the connected home, which could also involve a connected car and smart speakers. Well, exactly how many people use these smart speakers? Well, Parks Associates, they do surveys and predictions on that stuff, and they predict that in 4 years, in 2022, household penetration of smart speakers will reach 47% of households with broadband, almost a half. And that, I think that's about right. We're seeing more and more of these devices. Prices are coming down. They're easier to use, and we're looking at almost half of market penetration of homes with broadband of some kind in 4 years. New entrants in the connected consumer electronics market, like Samsung, Roku, and Facebook, are likely to make announcements about new voice-controlled speakers at the Consumer Electronics Show next year in order to get a share of this voice-first market. The average U.S. broadband household in 2018 had 8.8 connected computing, entertainment, or mobile devices, all with unique user controls or interfaces. Voice technology is emerging as a solution to this complexity, offering a single interface for all connected devices. Now, consumers have expressed a strong interest in this approach. More than a third of U.S. broadband households find it very appealing to use voice to control their entertainment devices. We took a look at the typical number of connected devices owned by households with broadband. And again, currently it's over 8.8 in 2018. Well, at the beginning of 2015, it was 7.6, and in January of 2012, it was 5.9. So it continues to go up, not at a fast pace, but, half to one on the average per year. Interestingly, between the first quarter of 2016 and the first quarter of 2017, it went down very slightly, 8.2 to 8.1, but it is slowly climbing. And even my home, I probably have 10 connected devices. I couldn't even count, but quite a bit. So that 8.8 number, again, that stuff adds up very quickly. Now, despite voice-controlled entertainment's advantages for searching and streaming content, consumer adoption remains low. Only 3% of U.S. broadband households using voice commands when watching video. Now, usage of voice-controlled search is held back due to limited product availability, inexperience, or lack of familiarity with technology, or simply old consumer habits. Consumers are increasingly becoming familiar with using voice commands to operate their smartphones, though. And again, I use speech-to-text a lot. Half the reason I think I'm just lazy. I don't feel like using the touchpad. I'll just go in and talk. You know, as a radio person, I think I talk fairly clearly. So generally, the speech-to-text works out pretty well. And it's kind of fun to see if it does try to spell the word wrong or whatever. So we do use that a lot. Back in 2017, about 40% of U.S. broadband households with a smartphone used some form of voice recognition software. It therefore is likely that consumers will become more interested in using voice commands to control other common consumer devices, including connected entertainment systems. The consumer electronics industry is weathering a rough spot as cell phones, tablets, and flat panel TVs hit saturation levels, and that's according to the experts. That's a lot of reason why the prices come down. Everybody wants your business, and the consumer wins, especially as Black Friday and Christmas approach rapidly. Newer product categories like wireless speakers are eliminating the need for more conventional electronic devices. The growing popularity of streaming digital media and the pervasiveness of smartphones are driving entire product categories. Camcorders, MP3 players, and dedicated GPS navigators. Remember TomTom and TomTom and Garmin and those devices? Well, you know, you can just use your phone for all that stuff. So that stuff is becoming obsolete. Who buys an MP3 player? Remember the old Rio players? You just use your phone, your tablet. You can get a nice tablet for $49. I mean, just use that. It does a lot of different things. So technology kind of merges devices into one, which, you know, is good and bad. It's good for the consumer, not necessarily good, though, for the manufacturers. Faced with stagnating sales growth, the industry has been turning to categories like wireless speakers and smart TVs as drivers of future growth. Rapid enhancements in voice technology enable wireless speakers to become smart speakers and smart TVs to get a wider role in the consumer electronics ecosystem. Manufacturers of other consumer electronics products, like streaming media players, have expanded their product portfolios with new voice-enabled models to claim their share of a quickly growing voice-controlled entertainment market. consumer adoption of voice-controlled consumer electronic devices places new interoperability demands on product manufacturers. In an ideal scenario, all consumer purchase products should work perfectly with each other. And that's one nice thing about technology and the scalability, but that isn't always the case. Again, companies like Apple and Microsoft often at loggerheads. Now, the reality of this level of interoperability remains elusive. Only 10% of consumers returning a consumer electronics device indicate that interoperability is the reason for the return. Issues ranging from high-end stereo speakers not being recognized by smart assistants to smart TVs that aren't quite so smart, failing to accurately understand voice commands from a shared speaker, are too common at this point. Again, like anything in technology, you have to iron out the wrinkles. Voice artificial intelligence systems remain weak in the contextual awareness required to properly respond based on which device the consumer is using, where the user is, what time it is, that kind of stuff. These variables may require different responses from the virtual assistant, though. Typical existing systems fail to account for them. Increasing the number of variables also increases ambiguity levels, which artificial intelligence systems struggle to address. Device vendors must build greater awareness levels into their systems in order to deliver more accurate responses to user questions or risk losing their customers to a more capable system with voice and artificial intelligence. So we're talking about consumer adaptation of smart devices, voice-activated controls, and we talked earlier about Alexa in cars, various manufacturers rolling out this technology. So what about the remote control? That's always a biggie. You know, the old-fashioned remote where you press the buttons. You know, I can use my phone to control my TV, and I did program it to do so, but it's really just in an emergency. If I'm lazy, don't want to get the other remote, the dedicated remote for my cable or TV is better. But in a pinch, the phone works, and it's kind of cool that you can use it for that. I mean, my LG phone is quite a versatile device, to say the least. So anyway, as the number of connected entertainment devices per household goes up, so do the number of remotes. You know, like a lot of people, I probably have 15 remotes lying around the house, and each one does have a purpose, but can we consolidate? As I said, even my phone can be a remote, but it really isn't as robust for that purpose as a regular remote is. So despite the desire for a standardized user interface for all their consumer electronics devices, consumer familiarity with handheld remotes makes them the standard for controlling devices. Just as the TV remote liberated the viewer from the laborious process of physically moving to the TV set every time you want to make an adjustment. God forbid you have to go walk a few feet to your TV and change the channel, change the volume, etc. Well, now you got remotes, you can sit in your easy chair, drink your beer, and just do it without hardly moving a muscle. Anyway, voice control, taking that a step further, is freeing consumers from the cumbersome process of manually thumbing a remote to search through a channel guide or key in a title on an alphabetic keypad to locate content. Voice interfaces simplify the experience by utilizing a user's verbal commands to make adjustments, or again, change the volume. So we went from turning a dial or pressing buttons on the TV itself to pressing buttons on the remote or using a menu on screen. Now you just talk. And it's like with Alexa, you know, turn my TV on, change the channel. Hopefully, if you would use this on your radio, you would say, tune to 107.1 FM and never listen to anything else. So, you know, I guess it could be good from our standpoint. Anyway, a person wanting to view the news would only need to say CNN to be directed to that channel. Voice command also presents a simple means of deeply searching a library, commands like find all free Tom Hanks adventure movies would be difficult and slow to enter on a manual remote, but very easy by voice. You know, find the best talk radio station in the world. Of course, your TV, well, radio, would know that's WWGH. Or you can watch Scott Spears' channel on YouTube featuring many of his exciting interviews. So, yeah, I see an advantage to this as someone in the communications business. Device makers, with that in mind, will continue to make manual remotes available in order to please consumers who want manual control. And in the event that voice-based functionality is unavailable or not effective, incorporating voice into the remote may incentivize consumers to try voice. But until users see a benefit of using voice, many will just want to use the regular remote. The consumer movement to voice-controlled entertainment is still in its early stages, but interest in these applications is quickly growing and impacting purchasing decisions, especially, again, as the holiday season and Black Friday approach. Companies wanting to capitalize on this growing market need to develop their market strategies with care and plan for both short and term successes. Success, according to the experts, will depend not only on a product's design and quality, but also on the ability to provide a more satisfying user experience than a consumer already can enjoy using traditional control methods. So, smart home, voice-activated remotes, interesting stuff. And we're seeing changes in trends and some surprises and maybe some non-surprises. Let me know what you think. Do you use a Alexa, Google Home? Do you use your voice to control your phone? Do you like the idea of talking to your TV and saying, hey, tune to CNN. Hey, let's find all of the movies starring this actor or actress. Well, send me an email. Let me know what you think. Adam@WWGH1071.com. Let us take a virtual trip to somewhat nearby Purdue University and find out what some very smart researchers are doing over there. Relates to Alzheimer's disease. It seems to develop over many years, and people, when they get the disease, can show symptoms over different amounts of time and different types and severity of symptoms. Sometimes we're not sure if it's Alzheimer's or something else. Obviously, understanding how Alzheimer's develops and manifests is important in trying to fight this devastating disease. Now, these researchers over at nearby Purdue University have been looking for new ways to track the formation of amyloid plaques within the brain. And those are the best known biomarkers of Alzheimer's. These Purdue researchers recently developed a so-called super resolution nanoscope that can show molecular level details of the composition of tissues. Recently, they optimized this technology to look deep into the brain. Using the new method, researchers at Indiana University were able to obtain three-dimensional images of molecules within the brain at a resolution that was previously impossible. So getting into the molecular level and investigating and hopefully finding a cure for Alzheimer's disease. Gary Landreth, Indiana University professor who worked on the study, said, while strictly a research tool in the foreseeable future, this technology has allowed us to see how the plaques are assembled and remodeled during the disease process. It gives insight into the biological causes of the disease so that we can see if we can stop the formation of these damaging structures in the brain. Now, this nanoscope relies on adaptive optics that contain mirrors that constantly change shape to compensate for light distortion introduced by brain tissue. By finely tuning how the mirrors deform themselves at lightning speed, The researchers were able to see the cells and their components down to individual molecules in mice that have high levels of amyloid plaques. So some pretty interesting stuff there by some very smart researchers in nearby Indiana. Medical technology, a fascinating field here in 2018. And one of the things we talk about here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, a twice-weekly feature here at The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Also in medical technology news, the last story happened somewhat nearby in Indiana. Let's also go to somewhere starting with I, but much farther away, Israel. Scientists at Technion, Israel Institute of Technology, have come up with a surprising way of fighting tumors, and in the process, showed that our brains have a role in preventing the growth of cancers. These researchers artificially stimulated the reward system of mice stricken with cancer. What the investigators showed is that over time, the mice that received stimulation had significantly smaller tumors than control mice that were not administered the therapy. The research team believes that their stimulation affected the nervous system so much so that the immune system was also somehow modified as a result. This seems to be because the sympathetic nervous system, which can manipulate the immune system, was receiving a lot of signals when the reward part of the brain was artificially activated. In addition to their findings related to cancer, the researchers also demonstrated that their technique resulted in an improved immune system memory, helping it to react more strongly when encountering bacteria previously identified as pathogenic. Asya Rolls, professor there at the university in Israel, said, "The relationship between a person's emotional state and cancer has been demonstrated in the past, but mainly in relation to negative feelings like stress and depression and without a physiological map of the action mechanism." Several researchers, for example, Professor David Spiegel over at Stanford, showed that an improvement in the patient's emotional state may affect the course of the disease, but it was not clear how this happened. "We are now presenting a physiological model that can explain at least part of the effect." So some very smart medical researchers in nearby Indiana and in Israel. Interesting stuff here. Let me know what you think. Do you think medical technology using these extremely sensitive microscopes and getting to the cellular level, molecular level, is that a good way to help fight disease? Well, I would certainly say so, and I really admire the tenacity of these scientists, not to mention their brains, which obviously are much higher quality than mine. Love to hear from you. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Your opinion on this topic and others. Adam the Computer Guy Show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Well, goodness sakes, as my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. And that we do here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, discussing some medical technology, net neutrality, California enacting its own neutrality law, take effect on January 1st, and some details on connected devices. Good stuff. Hopefully you learned something, tickled a few brain cells, and I also don't mind getting a little controversial like I do with net neutrality, but I feel very strongly about it, and I think this California law is going to affect other states and cause more drama out there on Capitol Hill. We shall see, and of course, we will keep track of this and keep you updated. Satch Sullinger is up next with Talking Points. Again, wrestling legend, very good friend of the station, Thunderbolt Patterson joining us throughout the day. Now with Scott Spears after the noon hour, speaking with one of the editors at the Columbus Dispatch about their endorsement for governor. Don't want to miss it. It's Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, and always somebody with interesting opinions, great guests, and like any show here on The Talking Place, always a surprise or two. I shall see you again this Thursday, the 4th, with more Tech Talk, today's top and trending technology topics on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Please listen. Your ears will thank you. That I promise. If you are a mobile phone or tablet user, you can listen to the station the same way that I often do with the TuneIn app. Search for TuneIn in your app store. It's free. Download it. Search for WWGH 107.1. Make it a favorite. Bookmark it. Listen on demand anywhere in the universe with internet access. Again, your ears and your brain cells will be eternally grateful. Coming up top of the hour, previews of past, present, and future shows, messages from our valued supporters and underwriters, obituaries voiced and produced by yours truly, news and weather from Scott Spears, and again, a surprise or two, pretty much how we roll here at The Talking Place. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Going to be rainy today, but rather warm temperatures. Looks like fall is not coming anytime soon. Adam, the Computer Guy, .com. See you later, alligator. What you told me nearly made me lose my head. When I thought of what you told me nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator. I said, wait a minute, dear. I know you mean it just for play.